Good afternoon, live from beautiful downtown Occidental, California, the home of innovation in the great state of California. It's the HR Examiner Radio Show. I'm your host, John Sumser, and today we are international. We've got Lisa Jones from Barclay Jones in the UK. Lisa is a longtime IT director type who found her way into recruiting and now operates a consultancy that does recruiting training and social media optimization for recruiting, that sort of thing. Lisa, how are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you. How are you?
I am on top of the world, Lisa. So why don't you introduce yourself in a bigger way to everybody on the line?
Thank you. Well, so yeah, my name's Lisa Jones. I have my own consultancy, Barclay Jones. We operate mainly from the UK, but we have some international clients. And our sole purpose is to work with recruiters to help them with their recruitment technology projects and to help them understand how to use social media to recruit better.
Okay, so how's it going? How's the business?
It's fantastic, and we're very excited about 2014. I'm hoping that people in the recruitment world feel the way that I do, but we are reading a lot about the upturn. A lot of my clients are feeling really confident. 2013 for us was a really interesting year of lots of technology projects starting to take off more recruiters wanting to buy more tech, more CRM, ATS stroke kind of stuff, and at the same time wanting to become a lot more strategic rather than just simply tactical with what they're doing with social media. So 2014 for us is very exciting, and we're also recruiting for a new trainer and a new project manager to join us as well, which will double our team. So that's obviously very exciting for us.
So why don't you dig down just a little bit more and give me an example of a couple of projects that you're working on so that people will get a really clear picture of what sorts of things you can bring to the party.
Yeah, so for example, one of our clients is Harvey Nash. They're based all over the world, but the main thrust of what we're doing with them is UK and Europe. And we're helping them with their new CRM migrations. They're moving to a brand new database for recruitment. And the kinds of work that we're doing with them at the moment is we've helped them understand the best product to buy, and we're helping them implement the product and all of the data and all of the workflows and the business process. And we're working with a global CIO to help him understand the best way of integrating that new piece of kit into the workflows, and obviously helping them with the change management piece, because, of course, it's humans involved at the end of this, and they're the ones that can be difficult to manage because systems normally do as they're told. So, yeah, it's quite an exciting project for us. We're hoping to go live with that very shortly. Other kinds of projects, there's a big recruiter in the UK called Capita. They also do all sorts of other things as well, but the main thrust of what we're doing with them is we are their social media strategists, and we help them understand how to use social media to improve their workflows, speed up, talk to candidates better, find more business. And we are working with the marketing director and the training team to deliver more content to the recruiters as well. So they're the kinds of things that we get involved with day to day.
That's an interesting span. So let me just spit that back. You help people figure out what technology they need. You then help them buy it and install it, and then you work the change management program. And that's a chunk of the business. And then the other thing sounds something like social media optimization. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah. But I kind of think that in a couple of years' time, people will get that social media is technology, and I get into lots of quite heated debates about this, but I suppose as a technologist, because I've been in IT blur years, I do believe that, for example, LinkedIn is technology. It's another piece of technology that recruiters can use to improve their day, to speed up their process, to cut down the cost of hire. Clearly, it's a marketing tool as well, but when it comes to recruitment, it's a business process tool. And even though we segment our business into two bits, which is recruitment technology and social media, I actually do believe it's all part of the same thing.
So dig into that a little bit more for me. Social media is a technology. What does that mean? What does that practically mean if I am the owner of a recruiting consultancy? Do I need to... do something differently besides figure out how to get on LinkedIn and find people?
I think, and this is a big part of our business, is we help recruiters understand what their business process could be and how it could be better if they used social media and technology better. So, for example, even if I'm a one-man band, I should really understand what makes money and how I use the workflows in my business to generate that invoice to the client. it isn't just as simple as interviewing a candidate, putting them in front of a client, and then sending out an invoice. There are lots of checks that people have to go through in terms of the process. I think what good recruiters do with social media is they understand where social media fits into the process, just like they understand when a phone call is appropriate, when it is appropriate to send an email. And if they get the science behind the technology, which is LinkedIn, Facebook, Google+, and when it's appropriate to use that stuff within the business process, that's when they are the most successful. The ones that don't get the business process, that kind of just see LinkedIn as something that's on in the background and they use it when they've got 5 minutes, they're the ones that get very little return on investment, are suspicious of why they should use Twitter, don't get where Facebook sits in the social recruiting cycle. So that's why I see LinkedIn, et cetera, as technology, because I just see it as a business improver, as well as, and obviously, helping you talk to candidates and clients, et cetera.
So it sounds to me like you're saying that there's sort of a universal workflow for using social media in recruiting. Am I hearing that right, that LinkedIn belongs in one place and Twitter belongs in another place and Facebook belongs in another place? Is that for everybody, or is that dependent on the customer?
I think it's not that structured. I think that there does have to be a relaxation of how we see these different social media facets fitting in. So I'm very much of the opinion that, yes, I might be more relaxed on Facebook. Yes, I might be a little bit more professional on LinkedIn. But they will certainly, all of them, at some point within the recruitment process, have a very important part to play. And I think the good, successful recruiters will understand that.
So that's interesting. I think you're doing something that's fascinating by describing these things as technologies, because what you said after you described them as a technology is that what really matters is the manners you have when you're using the tools. And I can't think of another place where manners matter in technology. Technology is sort of the world where manners don't matter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I think at the end of the day, I mean, Matt Older, who I think we all know, said something very poignant at a big LinkedIn event I went to in London last year, and he said that recruitment is one of the most social jobs you will ever do. It's one of the most social vocations. So therefore, social media should very easily slot into that. I think the challenge that the recruitment industry has right now is understanding where it fits into the process. But it has to be a process. Recruitment is a process. Yes, it involves humans, which by definition can be difficult to manage, but it is a process. And the good recruiters out there, even in traditional worlds, before technology really took a hold of recruitment and maybe turned it into a volume industry that was maybe over-automated, a lot of my clients that own their own businesses now and harp back to the good old days of sending letters and having lots of face-to-face meetings and having much smaller geographies, really did get what the process was, and they knew how to recruit irrespective of what kit they had to sort of provide that service.
Got it. So you seem to be on a tear for improving the image of the recruiting industry. What makes you want to do that? I've seen some articles. It seems to be a soapbox that you're standing on and shouting from.
I need one because I'm pretty short.
Well, you're short physically, but you're not short online.
Tell
me about why you're interested in improving the image of the industry.
I think it needs it. I think certainly in the UK, they are often compared to car salesmen or estate agents, real estate agents. They probably haven't got the best image because of their behavior is probably a polite way of putting it, and I'm making this a very generic statement. Look, I've been in the recruitment industry 14 years, which is a substantial part of my career. I have a lot of love for it because I have been intimately involved with it. I married a recruiter. A lot of my friends are recruiters, and they're all normal, lovely human beings who do a really, really, really difficult job. Whether you want to call it human trafficking, whether you want to call it selling humans, I don't know. But humans are incredibly difficult to manage. They have minds. They are very agile. They can change at a moment's notice. And being a recruiter is a very, very difficult job. It's been made even more difficult, I actually think. Even though I'm a recruitment technologist, I actually believe that technology has made it quite difficult now for recruiters because a client of mine used a term a few years ago, which I love, called option paralysis. And he said, look, Lisa, my recruiters have option paralysis. There are too many things for them to try and do to fulfill on their role. What I've seen in the last 14 years in recruitment when it comes to technology is the process hasn't really changed. Things still work if you do them in a certain order. But technology has diluted it to a degree. The younger ones coming in will go home when LinkedIn is shut down because they have no idea what to do outside of that process. And equally at the same time, and clearly the recession didn't help, but at the same time what social media has also done against the recruitment industry is given false hope, potentially, I feel, to corporates who have this notion that they can probably do their own recruitment, and that has devalued the market as well as recruiters who overnight are expected to be marketeers, and they haven't been given any training or any backup. There are some fantastic people out there like Stacey, for example, in Social Talent, and myself that also obviously evangelize about how to use this stuff to talk more effectively, but recruiters have never been busier, they've never worked longer hours, they've never had more options in terms of how they do their job. So yes, you can probably tell I'm quite evangelical about the industry, but I think it's mainly because I don't think they help themselves particularly well. But I also think that's because they probably have less time, they take on more vacancies than they probably should be working, and they also have candidates who are a big threat to the industry because candidates now can change their minds, be more agile, and approach the client direct. And I'm on a bit of a mission to kind of help my clients with that.
You know, what's interesting is you're talking about recruiting, and what you just articulated is a very British-specific view of how recruiting works. It's fascinating. It's fascinating to me. You know, in the UK, I think it's something like 80% of vacancies are filled by recruiters, and in the third-party recruiters. In the States, that number is 12 to 15%.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that what's happening in the UK is that it's becoming that one of the impacts of technology is that the marketplace is becoming more American, and that the idea that companies have their own recruiting departments, which is just part of the structure of the American recruiting industry, is coming fast and furious to the UK. And I wonder if the fact that the industry needs a reputation cleanup isn't going to accelerate that transition. Right,
I think it's very clear that
in the U.S., the number is 12 to 15% and it's falling.
I think it's interesting, and obviously across the globe you get so many different stats. I know, for example, in the Orient they're more heavily reliant on recruiters perhaps. One of the other interesting stats that I come across regularly when I've polled my own clients and also just read around the industry is that, for example, even though the 80-20 rule is an interesting stat across any platform. But in the UK, when we've done some research on this, we found that the average recruiting agency only fulfills on 20% of the vacancies that they actually are working at any given time. So although it is a big industry, and there's about 200,000 recruiters in the UK, which is significant, they're actually all potentially working the same jobs. And there is a big problem with recruiters, certainly at the moment because of the recession and the way that their butt's been kicked, that they are less likely to say no and more likely to be working vacancies that 10 to 20 other recruiters are working. Certainly a lot of my bigger clients are part of much bigger partnerships where they are all given the same vacancy and it's first past the post. And obviously that can affect quality of hire and speed of hire and obviously morale as well. But it is interesting to see across the globe how recruiting is viewed. But certainly in the UK, we have a big grasp on it. There is a big agency industry. But at the same time, we're not necessarily fulfilling on the jobs as well as we could be.
You know what I found interesting in that line of thinking is I believe there are roughly the same number of third-party recruiters and staffing folks in the U.S. and in the U.K. That number sits around 200 or 250,000 in the U.S.
Yeah.
And the labor market, the actual jobs market, is five times the size, right? And so that's the that's a ratio that I think is really interesting to think about, because the work is getting done differently in different places. Companies understand what recruiting means differently in different places, and that's fascinating. It's partly that inefficiency that you're describing, that the firm fills 20% of the work that it takes, is what drives work back into companies, because nobody can afford to have a vendor who only fills 20% of the work they take. That's a crummy vendor.
Mm. Although what's interesting, and I'm starting to again see a trend, and I can only obviously speak for the clients that I speak to every day, but a lot of them are starting to create culls within their databases now. So what they're doing is they're making decisions about who they don't want to work with now. They are slightly starting to raise their prices, which is good news, I think. They are making themselves more exclusive, and they're saying to businesses, look, if you're going to give the vacancy you've given to me to another 20 recruiters, this isn't going to work for me. This isn't how I operate. And I'm enjoying hearing those kinds of case studies. They're not as large as I'd like them to be, but the recruiters that are very niche in the UK are becoming more ballsy, is probably a polite way of putting it, and starting to know their own value again. But I still think it's going to take time for the industry to recover and to market itself more effectively. I mean, you rarely see an agency recruiter advertising on the TV in the UK, but pre-recession you used to see it a lot, but you just don't see it now, which is interesting considering how potentially big the market is.
That's fascinating. So I'm going to take just a moment and remind that you are listening to the HR Examiner radio show. I'm your host, John Sumser, and we've got Lisa Jones from Barclay Jones in the UK. Another thing that seems to be on your list of issues is helping recruiters explain the value that they deliver. So why do you think recruiters are so bad at explaining the value they deliver?
I think that, going back to what I was saying before, I think the job has digressed. The technologies that they have available to them are very disparate and probably not very effectively joined up. The option paralysis thing comes back in. I have regular meetings with clients where I suggest to them that they perhaps should explain the science of what they do, and not just save it for their meetings. They should explain it online. They should make it really clear what their outcomes are. I think recruiters are really great at explaining that they advertise. You only have to look at the typical recruiter's Twitter feed to see that they are effectively behaving like a job board, which is not good. And when you actually go and talk to these recruiters and say, well, look, why aren't you explaining online what it is you do, so that you can help your clients understand that you aren't just an advertising board, they are quite shocked, and they don't really seem to have the understanding of how to articulate what it is they do. And they're also worried about, if you think about it, this is just starting to click in my brain, I'm going to have to write a blog about this. But if we've got 200,000 recruiters in the UK, which is a massive population recruiting, then the last thing they're going to want to do, if they're only fulfilling on 20% of their vacancies, is to actually explain how they do that, because the one person that's probably going to see that they'd rather not see is a competitor. And recruiters in the UK are very close shop. They don't really like to talk to each other about stuff, even though inherently they're all great people. But I think they have very little time. They have very little skill when it comes to marketing their own business. Traditionally, they haven't needed to market their own business because they've been seen as necessary. And what they tend to do is they save their really, really good knowledge and sector expertise for the meetings that they have face-to-face. And I've had examples of clients who say, why would I say this stuff online? What am I going to talk to the client about when I go and see them if I do this online? And I think so, therefore, as a result of that, the recruitment industry in the UK is very immature when it comes to understanding how to articulate what they do online, because they're probably a bit scared. But also at the same time, they've got so much to do. If they're working 10 vacancies and only able to fulfill on two of them, statistically speaking, then where are they going to get the time to talk online with authority about what it is they're good at?
Well, that's interesting. I wonder, I'm not clear about how the retail sector is doing in the UK. In the States, the retail sector is vanishing, and what used to be stores on Main Street have been replaced by a UPS delivery guy handing you an Amazon box. So when you go to downtown in any of the little towns in the States, there are a lot of boarded up stores, and where they aren't boarded up, instead of being fresh new retail product, they're antique stores or used clothing stores, used bookstores, stuff that you can't get online. And so that's what the disruption of retail looks like. It sounds like the disruption of recruiting is really starting to happen in the UK. Do you think that's true?
I do, and I think what's also happening is I'm seeing a lot of agency recruiters going to work for, and I've got a twinkle in my eye, the dark side. I do have some corporate clients and in-house clients as well, but there does seem to be a shift where the in-house teams do want a piece of the action, just like you say in the States, and they are starting to migrate big recruitment teams into their own workforces to see if they can obviously have a piece of the action there. But at the same time, a lot of my clients in the UK are expanding massively and very excited about this year and getting their workforces ready to take on the challenges of the recruiting model and obviously the fact that business is starting to pick up again.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. When disruption happens, there are clear winners and losers, and it sounds like you're dealing with some of both. I dug through some of the articles that you've written about how a recruiter might describe the value that they deliver, and one of the points that you made was that recruiters are able to negotiate for both sides, both the candidate and the employer, in a negotiation. And that struck me as odd. If you had somebody negotiating both sides of a contract, in my culture, that would be seen as a conflict of interest. I don't know anywhere where it's understood to be a good idea that a single person represents both sides of a sale or some sort of contractual deal. How do you, if this is a value and that actually makes sense in the UK, how does somebody who's employing a recruiter stop or wrestle with the conflict of interest problem?
It's a really good point, and I think it's one that recruiters really need to get their head around. But in short, I would say that it's again going back to the value that recruiters offer the industry. So how are they trusted? What have they done to demonstrate that they are a good advocate, that they are a sector specialist, that they understand the market well enough, that they have the pedigree? I mean, it's never been easier to assess whether or not your recruiter, if you're a candidate, yeah, it's never been easier to assess whether or not your recruiter is any good at what they do. Now, there's an argument to say on social media that, you know, the average recruiter can just completely make it up. But there's an argument to say that, therefore, TripAdvisor shouldn't work as a helpful social proof tool for when I book a hotel. But statistically speaking, the top 10 or 20 hotels on TripAdvisor might have the odd bad review, but they're still going to be at the top for a good and positive reason. I think when it comes to recruiters, they need to demonstrate online and offline in meetings why they have the position that they have, that they do understand their sector well enough, that they understand the salaries that are involved in that sector and therefore asking for an increase is an appropriate thing to do, that they are there to advise the client on how to take this candidate on and the kinds of perks and benefits to give them. But they just need to demonstrate that they know enough, that they can be as impartial as is necessary, and just being honest. And that to me, is as simple as it needs to be.
Okay. I think sometime we might spend an hour hollering about that, because that doesn't really solve the question for me. But let's bookmark that, because it's a very interesting conversation to have in some other setting. The last thing that I want to tackle with you is the question that I've been asking on this radio show for a year now, and that is, being a recruiter means that you have to have good judgment about how this person is going to fit in that organization and how that organization is going to treat them, and then you need to be able to articulate and see the capabilities and potential of that person so that you can imagine how that fit will be over years. And you don't come to the job with that. So my question is, How do you get that, and does the training that you offer at Barclay Jones get at how do you make your judgment better? How do you make the output of the recruiting process better?
I think certainly when it comes to social media and all the technology that surrounds that, I think when it comes to being a great recruiter and having that good judgment, it's about knowing your sector again, and it has to be about that. And I'm sure the people listening to this that are sector specialists would agree that by being sector specialists, for example, maybe I'm an IT recruiter or maybe I'm a PR recruiter or a travel recruiter, I happen to know my sector so well and happen to know about the recruitment model as well, and I happen to know about people that would be great fits, that it's about demonstrating that. And the judgment comes from knowing my sector inside out, the listening skills that I have. Unfortunately, for a lot of recruiters, they don't have time to listen online. That's demonstrated by either silence or advertising too often. But I do think they can measure the fit, and they can measure the potential by the research that they do online and how they interact online as well, and what they can be seen to be doing. I mean, it's a bit of a kind of fluffy answer maybe, but certainly from a social perspective, recruiters need to spend more time researching their market and demonstrating that they research their market, so that when they meet people, they have enough information to progress with that role.
So I hear you. I wonder how you think the industry handles the following thing. If I go to a dentist, I promise you, I do not want to be one of that dentist's first 100 patients. If I go to a surgeon, I don't want to be. I'll find out how many they've done, and I want out if they haven't done 100. So I go to a recruiter, and I think the same thing is probably true. This level of judgment about who fits where can only be built with experience, and so inexperienced recruiters are liable to make more mistakes. And pricing doesn't reflect that, but the reality is that inexperienced recruiters make errors that are costly, and it's the only tool that I know of that they have to learn what works and what doesn't work. So how do you account for that? What do you do if you've got an inexperienced recruiter working for you?
Well, you shouldn't have an inexperienced recruiter working for you. My view is this. I think, and if I, this is where the language barrier might not work, but we have a term over here called the 360 recruiter. I'm sure you do over there as well. My view, for what it's worth, and I've written a lot about this as well, for example, when it comes to advert writing, that there are going to be parts of the 360-degree recruitment model that some people are just not equipped to deliver, and that's going to be for a variety of reasons, either just because they just physically can't do it, or it might be because they just don't have the longevity or legacy, whatever you want to call it, to deliver on that. So, and I do see this a lot because there are lots of graduate programs out there when it comes to recruitment, and what I worry about when I see that is that I'm not convinced, especially when I see that it's a niche recruitment model that is succeeding over the generalist recruitment model, that what I would prefer to see, if I had a recruitment business myself, and I'm currently blogging about this at the moment, but one of the things that I'm going to be putting in this blog is if I had a recruitment business, I would fragment the 360 model, and I would make sure, from a speed perspective, that there would be people delivering certain parts of that model. Even as a tiny recruiter, you can do that. Obviously, the one-man band you can't, but then you're not going to get a one-man band recruiter who's 21. You're going to get one who's 31 and who's been there, done that, and already worked for a big corporate. So I actually think the way the recruitment model has to change in order to speed up and take advantage of the younger market is it needs to break the model down and make sure that the people with the legacy and the longevity are the ones that are exposed to clients and to seasoned candidates. And that's obviously a big general statement I'm making, and I'm sure I'm going to get crucified online for saying that. But I do think there are some recruiters out there, as in recruitment agencies, who probably don't see the destruction that they cause by putting very young recruiters in front of people that probably demand and expect more for their 20 or 30% fee that they're having to pay. So I hope I've answered that, not very succinctly, but I do think the model needs breaking up and given to specialists that have had decent levels of training.
Well, thanks. This half hour has just ripped by. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. Is there anything that I didn't cover that you'd like to hit before we call it a wrap?
I don't think so. I think you've asked some really great questions. You've certainly pushed me. It's it's 7:30 in the UK on a Friday night. So you've
got
your money.
Well, that's perfect. I hope
tonight.
You had a little bit of wine before and that you've earned a little bit of wine after.
Well, apparently, according to you, I'm a wine bibber, and I did actually have to look that up. And when I looked it up, I was like, he's spot on there.
Well, I don't know what a wine bibber is. That was a retweet of Recruiting Animal, who swears there's no cultural differences, but a bibber is, I don't know what that is. I guess it's somebody who drinks so much they need a bib.
I would suggest, from a ladylike perspective, it's someone who appreciates a good glass of wine.
Ah, got it. Well, thanks, Lisa. You've been a good sport. This was a lot of fun. Have
Likewise.
A great weekend. It was good
thank
to have you.
Thank you.
On.
Take care. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for HR Examiner Radio today. Have a great weekend.